This kind of music always points beyond itself. The notes, the tones don't say, look at me. They say, look beyond me. The ground out of which they come, the canvas on which the sounds are painted, they point to that. And that's similar to our gathering here this weekend. It all points to that, the awareness. And that's very similar to, you've all seen these paintings, Japanese or Chinese, ancient paintings, where you have in one corner of the painting a little branch with leaves. In the bottom left you may have a rock, and 85% of the painting is nothing. And that's the whole point. And if you can realize that nothing, no thingness, as your own essence, then you know who you are. The quickest way to realization is to allow this moment to be. Allow life to be. Cooperate with it. Be aligned with it. And then move from there. That means you move with the wave, the flow, not against it. If you say yes to this moment, the now, then you begin to cooperate with the wave movement of, and there you, then action is becomes possible, and it's aligned with the totality. You're moving where the totality wants to move, not a little me struggling against it. Oh, I was going that way, but life is going that way. So that's the primordial spiritual practice, to live in the state of yes to what is. You can just try it out for a week, live in the yes, a day, an hour, a minute, and see what happens, what it feels like. Does it, what does it do to the way in which you experience the world, interact with the world, interact with other people, interact with nature? Your sense of aliveness, what does it do to that when you are aligned with what is instead of trying to get somewhere else? Even things that happen to you from the outside that come in when you're in that state, see what happens around you to somebody who is aligned with life, with the isness, the nowness. And if it doesn't work, you haven't lost anything, you go back to the no, Oh, it's so familiar. And of course, the old state is familiar. Even unhappiness becomes very familiar. Once resentments become familiar, they become part of who you are, the mentally made self. You're asking me to give up these resentments that I've been holding for 25 years? And I know they are true. And that's just something to watch also, watch your mind. Let it be, but watch. In Buddhist monasteries, when somebody gets on your nerves, another monk is talking a lot, and you have to be polite there. You can't say shut up. So what they say, what really means shut up, what they say to the other person, watch your mind. And then, of course, if the other person is still not watching his or her mind, he'll answer back and say, you watch yours. It's called ego. Identification with mind is ego. We may have some questions this morning, but let these questions also be here. Let's not focus exclusively on the question, and let's not focus exclusively on the answer, but also on the space around the question. So everything is given that spaciousness, that everything that comes in, and the answer is there, and let the answer is also the ultimate is always that. It's not the object that arises in consciousness, it's the consciousness prior to the arising of objects of consciousness, thoughts and perceptions. That's the ground of being, and that's the essence of who you are. Not losing touch with the ground of being, particularly when one begins to speak, then the tendency is for the mind to draw in all your attention totally, and then you get totally identified with an object of consciousness. And that's the arising again of a me, identified with thought. And then you're in that energy field of thought, which has its particular vibration. It's looking for the next thing, and what can I grasp next to add to me? The thought, completely different vibration from. And the amazing thing is, it is possible to use the mind without losing that ground. And one way of remaining in touch with the ground of being and not getting lost in mind is to feel your inner body while you listen to someone. See, feel the aliveness throughout the body. You're inhabiting the body as you listen. You listen so much better now. You can truly listen. When you're not in touch with the ground, you're not really listening because you're already interpreting and what the other person is saying, and you're preparing the next statement or what you're going to... Yeah, but just a moment, you listen to me. To truly listen is already... There's the spaciousness. Without the spaciousness, there's not the possibility of listening, truly listening. It requires that openness. In the same way, you would listen to nature when you go out into nature. And I'm now using the word listening in a wider sense, not just referring to the ears. The state of listening is the state of openness, of receptivity, of not imposing yourself on... Hear me, look at me. But the openness, where you merge with the totality without... The essence isn't lost, the essence is found in that. So listen to another person feeling the inner body. And then experience the wonderful thing that the answer, if an answer should be needed, or a reply, or it comes. Suddenly you find yourself saying something. And it's unprepared, not rehearsed mentally. A lot of mind activity that goes on in people, the inner monologue, the dialogue, is rehearsals for the next thing. And of course, when the next moment comes, it won't quite fit that moment because you rehearsed it before. And that's the... You're not aligned with now because you're bringing in the old, the rehearsed bit, and now you're playing it out. So you listen. And as you sit here, we've been also pointing to that. Be in the body, feel that aliveness, and you listen, or you watch. And there's already the spaciousness around whatever you're listening to. It exists in a greater, vaster field than whatever it is. It is the field of consciousness. Because the ability to listen is the state of thoughtless awareness. A state of great intelligence, of truly awakened intelligence. And you don't need any rules and regulations for conduct anymore when you're in touch with that. You must be good, you must behave in that way or that way. This is right action and right speech come out of that state. When you're not in connectedness with being, then other people need to tell you, you must do this and you mustn't do that. You must be good. Okay, I'll try to be good and do good. And I'll try to love my neighbor. That's hard. When you're not connected, you can try, but you'll see how hard it is to love your neighbor when you're not connected with that which is beyond objects in consciousness, beyond mental images. And I don't believe Jesus said, you must love your neighbor as yourself. He said this flows, Jesus was pointing to a change in consciousness, which is mistranslated as metanoia is the, I believe, the word in the Greek New Testament. And it's usually mistranslated as, I believe, repentance or something like that. But what it really means is a complete turnaround, a complete shift. And when that is there, that shift, then you love your neighbor as yourself. He don't even need to tell you that you need to love your neighbor, because then that leads to trying. You love your neighbor as yourself in the deeper sense of those words. You don't love him as you love. You love him as yourself because you recognize him or her as yourself. That's also the arising of compassion, which somebody asked me about earlier. Love and compassion are just two aspects of the same state of connectedness. Compassion arises, first of all, it arises towards yourself and your own mind patterns and your pain body and the fact that this form is not yet perfect, nor will it ever be, because no form can be perfect. Compassion arises with the patterns that still are being acted out within you, and you watch it, and you no longer condemn yourself for something that has nothing to do with yourself. The pain that arises, that is lodged in your pain body, nothing personal in that, human pain, and you say yes to it. So the yes to that is compassion arising. It is. And then other humans manifest different degrees of unconsciousness, some very deep unconsciousness, some less, and then also compassion with human unconsciousness that you encounter. That means you do not adopt a mental position that says you should know better by now, you should behave differently, you should. The very thing that you demand that, or ask or wish that others would manifest has to come through you towards those who don't manifest it. But it can only come when you are connected with the ground of being within yourself. Then the very thing that before you had asked for, that others should display compassion, you have compassion suddenly with their inability to have compassion, because they're, why? Not because they are bad people, they should know better by now. No, they are still expressing the human condition in its present evolutionary stage, which is reaching a transitional point, fortunately, but they're still expressing the old human condition. They identified with mind and mind structures into little me that wants to defend itself and that needs more power and more of this and more of that, and if it can't have power, it'll have more unhappiness and more misery. It doesn't matter, as long as I can add more to who I think I am. You can't demand people who are stuck in that. They cannot be in compassion. They are stuck in egoic mind structures. So the place compassion flows from you when you're connected with the ground of being, the stillness, then that comes, and the first thing it meets is the unconsciousness in the world, which you find still all around you. And you do not mistake the behavior of people who are still stuck in mind for who they are and make an identity for those people out of their behavior. And then you call them, they are non-compassionate, and and that becomes a label. They are then becoming reduced. And then you get stuck in your own egoic structures again. The moment you have labeled others, you get stuck in your own egoic structures. You can't, I believe somebody said that, if you judge others, you judge yourself, something like that. So compassion flows into this world through this form that has this form, the form that has recognized its essential nature, not as a mental thing, as a deeper sensing, feeling of that which is beyond the stillness, the openness, the receptivity, and the spaciousness. You allow this moment to be, that's the opening beyond your form identity, and then love and compassion flow through you into this world. And you meet behavior that does not display compassion with compassion. You don't make an identity out of non-compassionate behavior for those people who display that behavior. That is not who they are. That is not their essence. Those are mind structures that are operating, that's all. So that's the beautiful thing of the world can only change from within here. Let us look at some questions that may arise without losing touch with the spaciousness. There's a question there. Perhaps would you like to, is there a microphone for questions? One is here and one is there.
Hello?
Yes, thank you.
Within what you said just now, what do we do for the children that are dying of hunger? And I know it's kind of a big subject and we need first to work on ourselves, but how to also embrace the others that are being tortured and are dying of hunger and not just see it as something exotic and very far away, but a reality that is fed by some of what we do here.
Thank you. When you look at the world, you see a lot of what you see, what humans have produced and made, the man-made world, the human-made world, displays different degrees of unconsciousness. And whether you look at human history, read a book on 20th century history to see the madness, or you go about the world and look at what humans have done and are still doing to others, to themselves, to other species on the planet, to the planet itself. And they're all manifestations of human unconsciousness. Jesus said they know not what they do, and that statement applies to whatever humans are doing to each other. And if you feel called upon to take action to alleviate a particular area of suffering, self-inflicted human suffering, whatever it may be, in some parts they're inflicting, they're shooting and killing each other, in another part children are starving, in another part there's slavery, so many, in another part animals are treated dreadfully, like as if they were non-sentient beings, factory farms, all levels, the planet is being poisoned, there are so many areas where one feels this is vitally important, and then you look at another and say, oh no, this is even more important because there's so much that's going on. The planet is being destroyed. Maybe that's the most important because humans will disappear. Oh no, then, but humans are, and it's all going on. And it is possible that you may feel called upon to alleviate suffering and go into a particular area and take action there. So in some other part of the world or where you live, there's also suffering in other forms. There's a lot of suffering in countries where children are not starving. There's an enormous amount of mental, emotional suffering, even in so-called wealthy countries. Enormous suffering, enormous unhappiness. So there are different kinds of suffering everywhere. And that is still the truth of the Buddha's statement, who said the human condition is the condition of suffering, but he was talking about the unliberated human condition, which up till now, with few exceptions, this has been the case. So wherever you look, you will find it, suffering. So if you feel called upon to alleviate some form of suffering somewhere, that is beautiful. It is in itself a spiritual practice. Now the question is whether, what is your inner state as you take action in whatever area, wherever you are drawn to? What is your inner state? A state of anger or resentment, and then you're trying to do good out of an underlying sense of anger or resentment or condemnation of those evil people. That is action. The action may look good on the surface, but there is a certain energy field that flows into what you do that is carries the vibrational frequency of the underlying anger or resentment, whatever it may be. In Eastern terms, that would be called karmic action. So even if it looks wonderful on the surface, it is contaminated with that. So the most essential thing when you take action is, have you looked at the root cause of human unconsciousness, or is your whole activity dealing with the effects of human unconsciousness? The effects of human unconsciousness, which are everywhere to be seen, of course they need to be alleviated. There are people who need help, and if you feel called upon to help, it is a wonderful thing to do. Knowing all the time that you are working as you help those people, on the one hand you are working on the level of the effects of unconsciousness. If you at the same time aware of the root cause of all human unconsciousness that begins and ends within yourself, then the action that you take will be truly effective, because you are not just working on the level of effect, you are also working on the level of cause. That is the causal within yourself, because the root cause of human suffering must be in everyone. Everyone carries that root of insanity within, identification with mind, egoic mind structures. So you are aware of the two levels. There's the causal, which is why we are here. We are addressing the root cause. While we sit here, we are not doing anything to alleviate starvation, to alleviate violence that is going on at this very moment in different countries, to alleviate the emotional suffering that is happening even in the United States, in every big city, enormous amount of that, the children. That we are not doing anything, but this is not, we are at the moment here, we are concerned with going to the cause of human suffering. And once you have seen the cause of human suffering and gone deeper within yourself, beyond those mind structures that are the root cause of human suffering, then you can truly be effective when you go out and begin to tackle, even if you don't consciously go out to help the world, when you have gone deep enough within to the root cause of human suffering and have gone beyond that within yourself, you cannot not help others. You cannot not do good wherever you are. Whether you feel called upon to go into an area where human manifestation of human unconsciousness is particularly acute, that is possible. Perhaps you will go there and you will be a blessing there, because whatever action you take there will flow out of your peace, and it will be powerful and effective, but it will carry the emanation of peace. And you will not make an enemy. You will not create enemies and adopt a mental position. And that's how to be. I mentioned that in the book. Some of you may remember reading about the two levels of human unconsciousness. There's the level of cause, there's the level of effect. What you see around is the level of effect. Cause is within each one. And so, and then, now already, each one of you cannot not help the world as you leave here. You may not yet be totally liberated from egoic mind structures, but there's already the opening has happened. You're already in touch with something that is deeper than that. So bearing that in mind, then you see, you also then no longer have the feeling that I am helping you. There's a shared, it goes beyond words, it is a shared field. It's not so much thing, I have to help the world. There's no giver, there's no receiver. It all happens as the movement of oneness. You have compassion when you are connected with the ground of being. You have compassion with human unconsciousness also. And then action, very effective action, is possible. You're not angry anymore about human unconsciousness. Compassion. This is all contained in Jesus' words. They were killing him. He said, forgive them, they know not what they do. That's compassion. Let's have a moment of stillness. I have a few questions here that were submitted by Mr. Dalal, who is visiting here from the Sri Aurobindo Ashram in India. So I'll read. Start with the last question. Can the state of surrender, in which one is able to say yes to whatever is, be attained so long as the sense of a separate I or ego persists? It is true, ego is incompatible with a yes, because the egoic state is a state of no and a state of self-contraction. So how are we able, why am I telling you to say yes to the present moment? And why are you listening to me and understanding it and saying, yes, that's right, I know that's right? That's because the egoic structure have loosened within you. They are no longer exerting total control over you. Cracks have appeared in the shell of ego. And in those people in whom those cracks have appeared, so to speak, or another expression, in whom the ego structures have loosened, in those people there arises the ability to say yes to what is. Not, it doesn't come from ego, ever. And there are people who are still so strongly entrenched and trapped in egoic structures that the statement that you can say yes to what is would be incomprehensible and meaningless to them, to somebody who is still totally trapped in ego. So they wouldn't even be here and listen. The words would never even reach them. It would not yet be part of their experience. And if they heard it, they would hear the words and wouldn't hear them. They would be, the meaning would be filtered out by the ego. So the fact that you can listen to this and recognize the truth of the yes to what is, although you may not yet continuously be able to live in the yes because egoic structures reassert themselves from time to time, but the fact that you are listening here and you recognize the truth of it and you're beginning to experience the power that lies within the yes to now means the egoic structures are no longer are losing their hold over you, and something from the deeper consciousness emerges. That's why you're able to say yes. So it is true to say that the ego itself cannot say yes to what is ever. It's not its nature. It's the opposite of its nature. Would you like to... Oh, were you going to ask... I have some more questions here, and then we'll come to you. You can take the mic now. Aren't there degrees of presence as there are degrees of unconsciousness? The state of presence in which one has the sense of being a witness, not identified with the forms, seems relatively less difficult to attain and to sustain, but a state of presence which is also a state of joy and love does not seem to be within easy reach. How can the state of presence be deepened so as to be more than just a state of being a detached witness? Good questions. In many people, the state of presence arises for the first time when they can become aware of their thoughts. And in many people it happens when they read, perhaps they are unhappy, and then they pick up their first New Age book in this culture, and they read that about negative thinking and positive thinking, and they're suddenly aware, oh God, for years I've been trapped in negative thinking about myself and the world, and they can suddenly see their mind patterns. Wow. That seeing is the arising of presence. This is the beginning of you being there as the witness to your mind. And that's an amazing, that is the beginning of the transformation of consciousness, that the witnessing presence arises and you can see what your mind in many cases is doing to you. Not so much what you are doing to yourself, one could also put it like that. Many humans are making misery for themselves, their life is misery. And it is self-inflicted for many. It is self, others are misery inflicted by other humans. For others, it is self-inflicted misery or a combination of both. But self-inflicted really means inflicted on you by your mind patterns, the inherited conditioning of your mind. And for the first time, you see that, wow. So there arises... It's the beginning of presence arising. And it is true, the question, there are degrees of presence. Presence arises, and then it is the witness. And as the witness comes up, there also comes the choice. You suddenly realize you can have choice. You can create new thoughts. That's beautiful too. So then you move into the New Age field of positive thinking. Well, it's not all that New Age, that was already around for quite a while. Positive thinking, change your mind structures, visualizations, affirmations, and that's quite beautiful. And many people have experienced that, yes, their life has changed quite a bit due to that. They become aware of the mind structure and they have choice, they change them. To change your mind, the way you think implies that you are able to witness what the mind is doing. So that arises, and then after a while you have perhaps created better circumstances because your thoughts are reflected externally in the world, so your circumstances have improved and you have lived in a nicer place perhaps, who knows. And after a while you feel, okay, that's nice, but that wasn't quite it either. I'm not liberated from form. And even if you created through affirmation, visualization, you created a big house, and then you sit there, and, well, what now? And you still experience polarities, because the mind exists within polarities. You cannot create mentally a permanent state of happiness, no matter how many affirmations you repeat every day that you are happy. The very fact that you say, I am happy, implies in the unmanifested realm there must be unhappiness. Just as if you are saying continuously, high up, that would imply there must be a low somewhere, because high would have no meaning if there were no low. If you said mountain continuously, it implies the valley must be somewhere. If you say I'm rich and wealthy beyond measure, it must imply that there must be poverty somewhere, because otherwise rich would have no meaning anymore. If everybody were rich and wealthy, the word wouldn't even exist, rich and wealthy. The concept and the word can only exist because there is poverty also. So if you state I am rich, you are affirming also poverty somewhere. And this, so you notice after a while, although to some extent you can change things, what you cannot get out of is out of the polarities in this world, as long as you do not go beyond mind. Mind moves within polarities. Everything in this world moves within polarities. And so that's, after a while of doing positive thinking, you realize that you are still trapped somewhere in something. And what you are trapped in is the polarities. And that's an interesting place to be trapped in. And then you're ready for the next stage, although some people skip this intermediate stage. Some people go from dreadful unhappiness to liberation. But that would have to be very dreadful. That happened to me. I went from dreadful unhappiness to liberation without going through the intermediate stage of improving my mind, although I could see later how useful it is as an intermediate stage.